You're listening to Trek FM.
This episode of To the Journey is brought to you by Audible.com, offering more than 150,000 titles for iOS, Windows, Android, Kindle, plus Mac or PC. To get a free audiobook of your choice, visit audibletrial.com/trekfm.
Hi, this is Robert Duncan McNeil, also known as Tom Paris from Star Trek Voyager. You're listening to Trek FM.
Hello, everybody at home, and welcome. This is To the Journey.
To the Journey!
I am your co-host, Tristan Riddell, and with me, as always, is the illustrious, the illubrious, the suplublious, Charlene Schmidt.
Wow, that's an amazing us.
I think some of those words were made up, but they were fitting for you.
I don't care. That was awesome. That's like the best introduction ever. Thanks, dude. Hi, I'm Charlene Schmidt, and I've been totally flattered by Tristan Riddell, our very own international sex symbol, this week. I'm feeling good.
For some of you who don't know, that nickname came about on Twitter a long, long time ago.
Long time ago.
There was a few women out there who showed interest in the podcast that I was on, and I can't remember if I tweeted a picture of myself or if it was a group photo, or I can't remember what it was, but there was a few women who were not in the US and in a couple of different countries, and they all commented on the photo and said something like, "Too bad Trek FM's not a video podcast," or like, or I can't remember, or maybe it was when I was doing Hyper Channel and when I actually was on video for it.
It could have been, yeah.
Like, a few people who weren't in America made some comments, and then Chris actually came up with the name, and he's like, "Holy crap, you know, you're becoming an international sex symbol," and then it just snowballed from there. then I was the ISS, and then it's just, then they used it on, you know, basically on every promotion, on every podcast that we did for like a year.
Pretty much, yeah.
And so for those of you who like are just joining us and were like, why do people call him the ISS? It was not my idea. I did not give it to myself.
It was bestowed upon you.
It was bestowed upon me by our CEO and publisher. Anyway, that story aside, I am excited about today's episode, and I always am. But I love our list episodes, and I love our best of marathon episodes. And today we're talking about the top five episodes that you would want to watch on a lazy Sunday afternoon of season 5. Now, as we always say, this is not the best episodes of season 5. Not necessarily, it could be, but it's just the episodes that we think would make a really great 5-episode marathon when you're either by yourself or with your loved ones.
That's right.
Season 5 is a good season. I mean, I know, man. Once we got to season 4, I was like, wow, it doesn't get any better than this, but Season 5 rivals it. I mean, if you look at all of the Star Trek series, the middle is usually the best.
I would agree, with maybe the exception of the very end of DS9.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, if you take out those last 7 episodes of DS9.
Right.
But I guess you also have to take out TOS and Enterprise. So I guess you can only say middle of Trek, yeah.
I like to think of it this way. Trek series, with the exception of TOS, kind of got their footing starting in season 3, and then you're right, the mid-seasons are the most consistently good. They've got the most awesome episodes, they've got the best consistency, I would say, in terms of quality throughout the whole season. And then as things kind of break down in season 6 and 7, it goes down just a teeny bit, but yeah, that's kind of how it seems to go. With, I would say, the exception of Enterprise, because a lot of fans say either season 3 or season 4 is the best of that series.
Right. But the thing is, though, I'm sure that they were on a 7-year plan. At least they thought they were going to be going 7 years, like almost all of the Trek seasons before it. On that scale, if we imagine it, 3 and 4 were amazing seasons in Enterprise. Same with Next Generation. Same with Deep Space Nine, and same with Voyager. I mean, those season numbers were just where it was at. And I was actually having this conversation with Matt Hansen yesterday about how he said that, you know, it's a damn shame that TV shows are expected to have an amazing season one or they're not going to get picked up. They're not going to get renewed. And he's like, think about all the great series out there where the first season is not its best season.
Right.
Star Trek The Next Generation is a really big version of that because seasons one and two were not that great, but it turned out to be one of the greatest Star Trek shows and one of the greatest shows in history.
Right. There was a point in TNG's run where its ratings were beating out Monday Night Football, which, I mean, back when Monday Night Football was more of a thing than it is now.
Right. Right. I mean, yeah, when we were growing up, Monday Night Football was the thing to watch.
Like, it was.
You sang along with the theme song.
Glad I wasn't the only one who did that.
My dog actually sang along with the theme song.
Oh, but, nice.
But one thing that I started talking about with him, I said, it's a shame that that happens, and I'm sure we're missing out on some great TV. But at the same time, think about in the late 80s, early 90s, we didn't have anywhere near the amount of television to watch or as many channels to watch.
It's absolutely true.
And so there was less competition, and so they really didn't have to kick it in gear as much as they do now. Now we have so much on our plate, so much saturation, that if you don't have a kick-ass first season, you're just going to get lost in the noise.
Yep, you're done. You are canceled.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's absolutely true. The culture definitely has changed. There's a lot more networks out there. We've got things like Netflix and Hulu who are doing their original series. That kind of stuff didn't exist back in the TNG days. It was like
not
ABC,
close,
NBC,
yeah.
CBS, and Fox, and then a few cable networks. But really, like, even HBO wasn't producing shows the way they do now as they were back then in the late
80s. Not at all. They were mainly doing documentaries and just showing movies.
Right. It was very, very different. I mean, it's not really fair to compare the two, and yet I guess that's what we're doing. It's just different.
Yeah, you're right. It's just different. We have to readjust our perspectives. But thankfully, Voyager got more than one season, because if it didn't, we wouldn't have had this season 5 that we're talking about today. And I have all 5 episodes, and I feel like maybe we might have one or two crossovers, but I tried to keep it to a minimum because I was like, what? I literally made Char's list.
Oh, you did, really?
And then I made my own and then tried to compare and contrast. And I want to see how well I know you today. So what is your first pick?
Okay, well, you know, I have a feeling that you had the same difficulty that I did coming up with this list. There are so many possibilities, so many ways you can do a season 5 marathon and do it right. There's just so much good stuff to choose from. And so I thought, you know, when I just want to zone out and relax, what do I want to watch of season 5? That's kind of the way I did it. And so I kicked it off with Night. Because that's how season 5 kicks off. It starts off a little quietly. Let's start the marathon quietly. I also appreciate this episode because it has introspective Janeway contemplating what has happened with the last 5 years. And granted, I mean, I really wish they would have handled this a little differently, like, you know, more than one episode, because that's not how depression works. That's not how really any of this works. But I am grateful that we at least got this, because I like to see Janeway vulnerable.
I like this idea, and I like what you said about showing a vulnerable Janeway, and it would have been nice if we had a little bit more continuity where it lasted a little bit longer, and maybe, you know, Knight started off with her, like, being a little bit more reclusive. I mean, a little bit than what we're used to. And then all of a sudden, like episode 2 or 3, bam, she's in a room all the time. And that's when Chakotay has to defend his captain and say, listen, she can run the ship wherever she wants. You know, this is up to her. At the same token, as an episode, it's a really great episode. And it was a nice catalyst to push her into being a recluse because of, you know, the void, you know, seeing nothing, not being able to investigate anything. It's like when you take away the stars from Starfleet, you know, what are you? You're just manning a ship doing nothing.
Which is what they were doing.
Yeah. Which is what they were doing. And that was always enough to get her by. Well, we're explorers. This is our mission now, is to explore the Delta Quadrant and get home. This is our new mission. And when you take that away, it's just a straight shot. And she even had to explain it to Seven of Nine one time. Well, that would be a really boring trip if we just went from here to there.
Right. Yeah, you can even go so far as to say that Tom and Harry illustrated a very important point of you can only have so much fun on the holodeck. Like, at first you enjoy the break, maybe the first couple of weeks, and then after a while it sort of fizzles out.
Like, I don't know if that's true.
Well, maybe if we had holodecks, there we would go. Be in there for years. But these guys are fairly used to the technology, and they get into the holodeck fairly regularly anyway.
You're right. We would burn out and probably starve ourselves for a year before we left.
We probably would. We would be like those video game addicts who just stay in their basement for years on end, order pizza, don't shower, just stay plugged into the screen, working on their mission for hours on end. That would be us in the holodeck.
Screaming for their mom to bring more Hot Pockets.
Pretty much, yes.
Well, I like that idea. That's a good episode.
So what is your first pick? How would you kick off your marathon?
Well, I was kind of thinking the same thing about, you know, what's a good starter? You know, because you have to have a good starter. You can't just start off with a mediocre episode and build up. You gotta start off with a bang. And I thought it would be really interesting if we started with In the Flesh.
Ooh, good choice.
And this is episode 4, and I felt like this could have been even a good opener for the season.
Mm-hmm. Agreed, yeah.
And just because it starts off with a lot of intrigue, a lot of mystery, you have no idea what's going on. Chakotay's in San Francisco for some reason.
Right?
And so you're just like, what is going on?
Did they get home?
Yeah, exactly. You're like, and why is he pretending not to know what's, or like, why is he pretending he fits in? You know, it was just so cool. It was great to see San Francisco again. I love 24th century San Francisco. And
me too.
I just love 24th century Earth, and we don't get to see it that much. It's just such a treat when we see it, even a holographic representation of it.
Especially on Voyager.
Yeah, absolutely. And I feel like it's great to start off with a mystery, and this has a lot of, it doesn't have a lot of action, but as I keep saying over and over, it has a lot of intrigue and a lot of mystery and some great special effects with 8472, especially when the doctor says a sheep in wolf's clothing and all of a sudden the human morphs into it on the biobed.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's just amazing. It's just, I think this is a very strong episode that starts you off but doesn't necessarily need to bring you home.
Yeah, I totally agree. And I think that doing this as a starter is a fantastic idea. Had they not kicked the season off with Night, this would have been a fantastic idea to open season 5 because of that intrigue. What is going on? Why are they on Earth? This is a very strong episode overall, and I'm glad you picked it because I did not. I'll just give that away right now.
All right, what's your number 2?
Okay, number 2. I'm not necessarily going in order, just as a forewarning, this is not a chronological marathon like season 4 was. Mm-hmm. I'm going to go with Counterpoint.
Yep. See, I knew you were going to pick that one.
Yeah. I'm pretty.
You surprised
like
me
that.
On Night, but you did not surprise me on Counterpoint.
Okay. Well, it's one of Voyager's finest hours, I think. I mean, sleazy Kashyyyk. You just, when you know what's going to happen, it's just fun watching him go down.
Prox.
And for the first time, you will wonder, okay, who's ahead of whom in this little game, right? So, I mean, it's good either way. It really is. It's a superbly acted. I mean, you can tell that they put a lot of energy into this one. It's a very good script. And then, of course, the inclusion of the music, because it is Counterpoint. That's right. Cool, too.
Right.
So it's just a very nicely well-put-together episode. It's about as solid as Voyager gets. And we get a few of these in season 5, too. So this is just one of many.
Yeah, we've talked about this episode a lot. And yeah. it has some good stuff. It's got good bad guys. It's got good guys. And it's got betrayal, and it's got danger, and it's got great use of technology. I mean, it's just,
yeah, manipulation, deceit, guessing games. There's even a kiss. I mean, what more do you want in 45 minutes? You get it all.
Absolutely.
Okay. What's your number 2?
My number 2 is Gravity.
Oh, hey. Yeah.
I felt like this would be a good sophomore take in the second stage of our marathon, because this one is, it starts off right in the middle of it. You know, like, you don't see them. Most Star Trek starts off, they're in the shuttle. And it's like, oh, yeah, this is really fun, you know, trying to, you know, mine gaseous anomalies, or because we just got back from meeting with this new culture that we're trading with, and then are like, oh no, something's going on, and then they start shaking the camera. You know, I like that we started on the planet with Lori Petty, and then she sees the crash. We see it from her perspective.
That's
I think
cool.
That's really cool. Mm-hmm. And I just think this is such a good episode, and it deals with Tuvok on a very real level. Just that we get to know a little bit more about Tuvok, and I feel like Tuvok's a fascinating character that we could have seen a little bit more of, and how he deals with these emotions, even though he doesn't let them rule him, he still has them, and these feelings towards Lori Petty, and how he's like, I can't have these feelings. And Tom's like, listen, we're gonna be here forever. You know, like, we may not be, like, Voyager's long gone because the time is going faster in this gravity well than it is outside on Voyager, which is also fascinating. And it's just, I feel like it's not life or death until a little bit later on, and we have a nice shootout at the end. So it's nice and introspective, get a little perspective romance, and then bam, ends with a massive fight. And I think that's a good episode to kind of give you some peaks and valleys in a marathon.
Yeah. Yeah, this is a great selection. I love it. We did not get enough of Tuvok in the series as a whole.
Yeah. Tuvok and Chakotay.
Oh, yeah, definitely Chakotay, definitely Harry Kim, but also Tuvok. And I love the fact that you described him as a fascinating character. Not fitting.
Didn't even notice I did that.
You did. Yes, we could have used a couple more episodes like this where we kind of get into Tuvok's head a little bit. I think we would have appreciated him that much more if we had.
I think so, too. And also, I love Lori Petty. I think she's fantastic. She's unique looking. She's a great actress. And she's perfect for Star Trek.
Yeah. Yeah. Worked well. Very well. This episode also has some cool visuals, too. So you get that as well.
Yeah. Well, what's your third pick?
All right. Well, I'm probably going to be on the predictable side here, but I don't care. This has to go in any season 5 marathon I do. That is the 100th episode of Voyager, Timeless. You knew I was going to pick that one, didn't you?
Yeah. So far, I've gotten 2 out of 3 on your list.
You're doing pretty good. Well, okay. I cannot wait for this episode on Blu-ray for the special effects alone. I mean, we've talked about this episode quite at some length. It's got everything. You know, they really nailed it for commemorating the 100th episode of the series. It's got the fantastic time travel story, and you've got special effects that are fantastic. You've got Captain LaForge, as we discussed last week. Mm-hmm. And then the best part, though, of this episode is the fact that characters that we aren't always giving attention to they shine in this episode. I mean, it's Chakotay and Harry. What a heck of a pairing that is, right? And granted, yeah, Robert Beltran, he does fantastic with what he's given, but who really impresses me is Garrett Wong. He nails it as Harry. Whatever LeVar Burton did, who directed the episode as well, he really brought out the best in him, and he makes this episode.
Yeah, that was such a treat to see LaForge, to see Burton as LaForge, as Captain LaForge. And it's just, I know we can get away with it because it's an alternate timeline. We're not going to see that timeline again. So we can do whatever the hell we want. I'd love to see how that went in the writer's room. Like, it could have been like some no-name captain, like, oh, it's Captain Richards or something like that. Mm-hmm. And Burton's like, no, this is going to be Captain Geordi. That's who that's going to be.
Yes. And if that is in fact what happened, he was absolutely right. Had it been some no-name dude, like the captain of the Excelsior in Star Trek 3, like, who cares?
Yeah, who cares? Exactly.
Go to hell, dude. Get out of my way.
Like, you don't always need it to tie in to another show or another universe, but it's nice when it happens.
When it happens like this, when it, like you said, because it's an alternate universe, it makes sense. And why not have Captain LaForge? Why not?
Why not?
Fun. That's a fanboy moment. That's great.
Absolutely.
So,
middle of
the road for you. What have you got?
Middle of the road for me is, this was the third choice. The middle of your marathon is very important. I feel like if you start off slow, you got to go high and then come back down. Or if you start off high, you gotta level it out a little bit. And so I chose to level it out because in the Flesh, we had a lot of intrigue and mystery and tension. And in Gravity, you had a lot of introspective, but, you know, violence all throughout. and with a big explosion at the end of phaser battles. So I thought someone to watch over me would be a great middle-of-the-road pick.
Oh, I knew you were going to pick this, so I left it out intentionally. I'm glad I'm 1-for-3 now.
Yeah, this is episode 22 of season 5, and this is where the doctor tries to teach Seven of Nine how to go on a date and how to dance, how to sing. It's just a fun episode. It's, you know, no one's going to die. The Voyager's not going to explode. And
for once.
It's just nice to see some character development and have an entire episode focus on character development between two characters we love and two characters who we love seeing interact with each other. And they've proven that they can make a good episode together. And it's just great to see the character of Seven of Nine grow into more humanity. I wish we had more episodes like this where she would grow and then stay grown.
Right. Yes.
That's the important thing, because these moments happen all the time, but then it's the same Seven every week.
It's true. This is such a great episode. It's so touching, too, between the Doctor and Seven. All the emotions, the exchanges between them. It is fun to watch, but it's also just, it kind of gets on your heartstrings a little bit.
Yeah, it does, because we always kind of suspected that the Doctor had feelings for Seven, but it was always just like, oh, is he just a mentor? Is it just, you know, what is it? But this one confirmed it. It's like, no, he likes Seven. He wants some Borg on his side. And then it was confirmed at the end, but then Seven's like, you know what? I think I'm just going to pause on doing this because there's no real suitable people for me. And he's like, oh, there's no one you can think of? Oh, okay, all right.
Yeah.
And then we end the episode where he sings that song by himself that they sang together.
Oh, gosh. Yeah, that's kind of heartbreaking. It really is. I don't know about you, but I'm rooting for the Doctor in this one.
I am rooting for him in this episode to express how he feels, but I am very glad, I am very, very glad that they did not end up together.
Yeah, I guess they couldn't do it because the angst of not getting them together is way better than actually pairing them up.
Yes, yes it is. Yes it is, because the will they or won't they, there's always that will they or won't they. Whenever you ask that question, it's always usually, yeah, they will. It's they right. Introduce the couple or these two people interacting with each other at the beginning of the show or the beginning of one of their introduction. And then there's sexual tension for 3 seasons. And then they finally have a big wedding at the end. And every single show is like that. And I'm just really glad that we did not see that culmination here, because sometimes you don't get the girl. Sometimes he's not interested, you know, and it's realistic.
It is. It really is. I'm glad they didn't become the Jim and Pam of Voyager.
Yes.
Now, granted, I love Jim and Pam on The Office, but had this happened, had they actually paired them together, as much as I wanted it to see it happen, no, it really would have fizzled out so fast. This was way more interesting, way more emotional. I'm glad they went with this.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah.
All right, what is your fourth pick?
Okay. Well, you've mentioned placement quite a bit, and I feel like with my first 3 selections, it's... yes, they're entertaining, but they're fairly serious in nature, so it's time to lighten things up a little bit. And you're already smiling. You know what I'm going to pick. Okay, fine. Bride of Chaotica.
Yeah, this one's on my list, too.
How can it not, right?
Yeah.
I mean, this episode is too damn much fun not to include on a marathon. I mean, it's kitschy, it's funny, it's a welcome departure from the typical Alien of the Week threatens the ship storyline. And I love watching the actors break out of character and do something new.
Yeah.
They're enjoying themselves, and that's contagious. And I mean, as a member of the audience, I'm having fun watching them have fun. What's not to love?
I mean, that is true. You make a good point there. Like, we have fun when the characters have fun. It's intriguing to watch them do it. And it's just so great to see Janeway let loose, because it's not Kate Mulgrew pretending to be chaotic, being the Bride of Chaotica. It's Janeway pretending to be the Bride of Chaotica. And
right.
I know that sounds simplistic when you say it out loud, but this is the captain we know and love that we've seen for 5 years, and she just lets loose and throws herself into the part.
Right, and that's the true skill of the acting, is no, it's not Kate Mulgrew playing this character, it's Janeway entering this character, played by Kate Mulgrew.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
It's we've talked about this episode so much over the past couple of years we've done this podcast, and the music is even in our intro when you listen to the podcast. That's how much we love it. It's just, it's part of me wishes that we could have seen this world again. I know we see it briefly later on, just for like a during Shattered, just for a little bit. But I'm also glad that they didn't revisit it, because it's so great. You know, like lightning probably wouldn't strike twice with this one.
I think to center a whole episode around it again probably would have been taking their chances a little bit too much. I mean,
right.
Would I have liked to have seen a little more Captain Proton? Yeah, of course. But maybe as little snippets, kind of like what they did, where we just saw teeny bits, or we saw Tom and Harry exit the program or something like that.
Right.
On a very rare occasion, like once a season, like, oh, they're still playing that. Cool. But we don't actually see them doing much with it. What I really want to see, though, what I want to read is Dayton Ward's novel on Captain Proton, because this is something that he's mentioned many times he wants to do. And I really think Pocket ought to let him do like a little ebook or something and just write it a Captain Proton adventure.
Didn't somebody do that? I thought that happened. Wasn't there a Captain Proton novel?
Not that I'm aware of.
I thought somebody did something and it wasn't fan fiction, like it was actually published. I don't know. Maybe I'm making it up.
I think you're confusing that with the possibility and the desire
Maybe so,
we talked about it on Twitter, and Dayton Ward says he's totally down to do this, and I just really want to see it happen someday, because I know he would have a blast with it, and I would have a blast reading it.
I think, I know a lot of people disagree with me. Like, a lot of people just don't care either about animated shows or comics. When it comes to adaptations, and I know a lot of people do, but whenever I bring this up, I usually get some resistance. This would be perfect for a webcomic or an animated, like a quick animated show or a comic book. It would be fantastic to get the visuals and not like, a novel would be fun, but I think it would be one of the fun things about Bride of Chaotica and Arachnia and Captain Proton is seeing all of this 1950s futuristic stuff.
You know, you're absolutely right, and this would translate so well to a comic book format that, you know, maybe that's the way this ought to go.
That's my two cents.
Okay, Dayton Ward, he can write it, and then we can get somebody to illustrate it. Oh, this would be a masterpiece. Come on, Pocket. Make it happen. Okay, number four for you.
Number four for me is Extreme Risk.
Good one.
I love this episode, and we all know how I feel about B'Elanna. And I love B'Elanna episodes. I don't think there's a single bad B'Elanna episode out there. And there's something about this one that I feel like it's a little out of nowhere. You know, we didn't see it coming. And that happens a lot in Star Trek. We're like, all of a sudden this person has this issue, kind of like Janeway being a recluse and depressed and everything like that. There was no build to it. It's just, bam, we have to imagine this history happening even though we didn't see it.
Right. And this did not have the advantage of being a season opener to where we can just take into account, okay, this has been happening all summer long.
Yeah, this was over the 3 months that we took a break from Voyager. Yeah. So disregarding that, it was nice to see Torres deal with her issues, not just with her daddy issues, not just with her issues with Tom, but just on a deep personal level. The Maquis were her family, and now she barely has that on Voyager because that identity is always getting more and more washed away. And then she gets the news that everybody's gone. They're dead. The freedom fighters are eradicated, and they're pretty much all that's left or who's not in prison. And it's just, think about how traumatizing that is. And that's the thing, is that she kept trying to put herself in these dangerous situations so at least she would feel something. You hear about that all the time. I have had people in my life who have been that way, who have treated themselves that way because they're in such a low emotional level, they don't know what to do. And this was very real to me. And the most important thing, the reason why this is one of the reasons why this is such an amazing episode, is because Chakotay loves B'Elanna. No matter how you slice it, he loves her. It, you know, doesn't have to be in a romantic way. There's so many different types. But he loves her enough to literally throw her into this situation and make her deal with it, force her to deal with it because she kept trying to run away from it. And this was the key emotional level of a friendship that doesn't always happen on Star Trek. And I'm thankful it did in this one.
Absolutely. Chakotay is the only person who could do this, too. I mean, could you even imagine Tom doing this?
Nope.
It would not play out the same. No, Chakotay's got that special bond with B'Elanna. I don't want to say it's like kind of like a father-daughter. He's not really so much a mentor anymore, but he is that close confidant. He knows her inside and out and knows what she needs, and he loves her enough to where he's going to force her to do what she needs to do to kind of start overcoming this.
You could maybe argue brother and sister, but maybe more like your favorite uncle. I don't know. Who you once had a sex dream about. I don't know.
So that explains persistence of vision.
Yeah.
I don't honestly know if a family member is a relatable term. I don't know if any of those work.
I think you're right. I think you're stretching if you try to make it into a family terminology.
No, it's just strict up friendship. Yeah, like that one maybe where you wonder that one time, okay, should we cross the friend zone and make out, like in persistence of vision? But then you decide, no, the friendship really is that much more valuable. Maybe it's that.
Yeah, I don't know.
I don't know.
I think the only way to describe it is when you say it's like Chakotay and B'Elanna. That's what that is.
We just intrinsically know what that means.
If you watch
Voyager, you know what this is.
You know what it means. If you're listening to this podcast, you know what it means.
Yeah. Well, besides, I mean, Chakotay was always meant to make out with Janeway.
All right. Bring it home.
Okay. Well, we started off my marathon a little quiet. We're going to go out on a softer note because we've kind of gone from down to up. Then we're going to go and come back down just a little bit. We're going to ease out of this. And we're going to go with 1159. This is one of my personal favorites. Yes, I know you knew that I was going to pick it. I don't care.
No, I didn't know. Well, it was
really?
it was between this and Dark Frontier because I know you love the idea to get away with having two episodes when they air as one.
It's true.
Because you're like, I can totally use it because they aired it as one, even though it's a double length episode.
Neater.
And
no.
So I half expected that one. But then I was like, if she doesn't pick Dark Frontier, she's going to pick 1159.
No, I'm sorry. 1159 wins out. This is a sentimental favorite of mine. You know how some people will watch Star Trek Generations around Christmas time because there is the Christmas scene and it came out kind of around Christmas time in 1994? Well, 1159 takes place like around New Year's Eve. And it might have even aired around then. I don't quite remember. So this is like a sentimental favorite. I play it that time of year out of tradition. I mean, it's been happening since 1999. So this is just one I pick out as a treat because I love to watch Kate Mulgrew as another character. It's sort of like Bride of Chaotica where we see the same actors doing something a little different. And I know that for that reason alone, it's not everybody's cup of tea. But
right.
For me, I like it. It's a nice departure. I wouldn't want to see it all the time. But this one time is pretty cool.
This one, you definitely connected with this episode more than I did. A lot of people are in love with this episode. I never really fell in love with it. I appreciate it for what it is because I like it when Star Trek does something different. And this is definitely something different. This is a non-Star Trek story. This isn't a Star
Trek
story.
Yeah.
You could maybe relate it to Carbon Creek in Enterprise.
Maybe, or maybe DS9's Far Beyond the Stars without the big social message.
Yeah, but the thing is, with Far Beyond the Stars, it still had that sci-fi element because things were happening to Benny, where
True.
He was envisioning Sisko, but on a lower note. You know, it's much more of a social message episode. And with Carbon Creek, you still have the sci-fi element because they're Vulcans on Earth trying to avoid detection. So 1159 is in a category all its own.
It kind of is. There's not a whole lot like it in Star Trek.
And I appreciate that. I appreciate its attempt and its style more than the episode itself. I'm not saying it's a bad episode. It just never really connected with me.
That's a fair criticism. I think a lot of people feel the way that you do.
My fifth choice is Bride of Chaotica, so we don't need to talk about it again. But that's how I felt. I thought that would be a great ender. Like, I thought that would be really nice to just be like, that was a nice marathon. You know, like that's how, you know,
that
that's how
fun.
You'd end it. You know, you're like, okay, Arachnia.
Yeah.
But there are so many great episodes in season 5. You could watch almost anything except for the fight in season 5 and have a great time.
Or the disease. Sorry, space herpes does not make the marathon.
I'm sorry. No, the disease is fun. That is a fun episode because it is so silly.
I just thought of something. What would you do? I'm going to put us on the spot right now. What would you do for an anti-marathon? Like the best of the worst of season 5? Because ooh. I would put the disease on there. I would put the fight on there. But what else
disease,
would make it?
Yeah, real disease, quick. Fight. Bliss, maybe?
Yeah, that's a weaker one, I would say. Yeah. Yeah.
Once Upon a Time?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that definitely has to go in there.
Like, introduction to Flotter is fine, but it's a very flimsy premise.
Yeah, you know, I mean, it's really hard to do a kid episode, and this, yeah. I mean, Once Upon a Time is probably one of the better ones, even, but it's still, yeah, I could do without it. That would definitely make the anti-marathon.
So the fight, the disease, Once Upon a Time. So that leaves us two more. Bliss, because I mean, Bliss isn't a horrible episode,
no,
but it's also not very good. You know, it's
pretty mediocre in comparison to a lot of these others. But the last slot, man, oh, maybe Warhead. That's like the last thing that I can think to put in there, and it's not like that's a bad episode either. I like all the other ones more than I like that one.
We can't find 5 truly horrible episodes in season 5. That's 26 episodes, and you can't find 5 horrible ones.
That's a strong season.
You can find some mediocre ones. You can find ones where you're just like, okay. But seriously, in a Star Trek season, think about how hard that is to not find 5 horrible episodes.
Solid season 5 here. No wonder this was... We could go on and on and on, but season 5 isn't the only thing we've been talking about on Trek FM this week, so here's a little glimpse at what else is happening on the network.
Previously on Trek.fm, Standard Orbit.
DC Fontana.
The genes and everybody saw what she could do, and they allowed her to transcend the role of secretary, much as Peggy in Mad Men.
Earl Grey.
Saucer separation.
And usually it's said very dramatically, the star drive section only? What?
Like they left half the ship? Where is it?
The other half will come on Tuesday.
Could it be in a pocket dimension? I don't even know.
You left space dock without a saucer?
The Ready Room.
Coda.
Jerry Taylor wrote the book on Janeway, literally. She wrote the book on Janeway, and she reinforced that ideal and that history and even made Mosaic canon because she could. The Orb.
Imagining an Abramsverse DS9.
I feel like that would be the arc of the first season, would be, what are the wormhole aliens? Are they aliens? Are they gods? You know,
Are they smoke monsters?
Is that them around the corner there?
Why is there a polar bear on the station?
To the journey!
Top 5 Voyager action sequences.
Of course, I want you to do your Kate Mulgrew impression of her last words in the episode.
Time's up.
That has to be your best one yet.
Oh, thank you.
Warp 5.
Romulans on Enterprise.
I think even in Kirshara, the Romulans might be thinking, like, we need to infiltrate the Vulcans. We need to bring them back to our side. So we can nip this in the bud and make sure that this growing alliance doesn't happen.
Commentary, Trek Stars.
Nemetric Part 1, Trek.
This is actually the one episode where I enjoy Neelix when he's being annoying. But then also, he gets a little something-something with the Klingon ladies.
Melodic Treks.
Because it is literally these two six playing hide-and-seek in the nebula, but all the way through the music, he's there, it's keeping you rooted to what's going on, and it's just a major and integral part of what is going on the screen.
Literary Treks.
Bones chooses about being either a healer or a Starfleet officer, and he chooses in this situation to be a Starfleet officer, and it kind of...
But not easily.
Not at all.
And that's what else is happening on Trek.fm.
Check out all of our shows. We are available on pretty much any platform, as well as a new thing called Spreaker, which I honestly don't know a whole lot about. I think it's a mobile podcasting app. So if you're on that, maybe you can educate us, because I honestly have not used it yet. But we are also available there now. But I prefer, honestly, going to our pretty page on iTunes. You can go to itunes.com/trekfm. We have a nice little layout because we are now a featured content provider on iTunes. And you can see, well, it's just a nice quick way to get access to a lot of our older stuff. Say episodes like with Larry Nemechek, who's been on several episodes of many Trek series or many of our Trek FM series, but they might be a little far back. I mean, we've been doing this for a couple of years now, since 2011. So you don't have to dig through necessarily. They're all right there, nicely listed and organized. So check that out if you haven't checked that out yet. There's some fun stuff in there. We also want to thank all of those of you who have written in with episode suggestion ideas. Thank you very much for those. We love hearing your ideas. And if you have an idea that you want us to consider for a future show, go to trek.fm/contact, select To the Journey off the drop-down menu, and let us know what you want us to talk about. We'll certainly consider the idea, and if we do use your idea, we will give you a shout-out on the podcast, just like we do when you write us a 5-star iTunes review. Now, none of this would be possible without the help of our sponsor because, let's face it, this stuff costs. So, let's hear a little bit about our sponsor.
Our sponsor for this show is Audible.com. Audible is the premier source for audiobooks with more than 150,000 titles to choose from, and new titles coming every week. From classics to current bestsellers, Audible has something for everyone. You'll be happy to hear that both Mosaic and Pathways are available from Audible. As a Trek.fm listener, you can get a free audiobook of your choice, along with a 30-day trial to see just how great Audible is. Just go to audibletrial.com/trekfm and sign up today. Again, that's audibletrial.com/trekfm. And we thank you and Audible for supporting To the Journey and Trek.fm.
Now, next week, what have we got going on?
I'm going to keep that a secret, Char. I'm not even going to tell you, because we're...
No spoilers?
No spoilers. Yeah, this is a spoiler-free zone. If you want to find out what we're doing next week, you're going to have to wait until next week and download the podcast and listen intently. And also subscribe as well, and that'll force you to download it. But until then, this has been To the Journey.
To the Journey!